Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Bet you they line up to hear this one.
I want to ask you a bunch of questions. I want to have them answered immediately.
The segment most likely to get someone suspended, fired, or at least spending the night on the couch.
Cannot win with them. Cannot coach with them. Can't do it.
This is basically a giant list of things you can't do.
Yeah, it sounds thrilling.
I will tell you a deeply personal story.
So what's your question?
I have a tendency to overshare.
Quid pro quo. I tell you things, you tell me things.
What is your worst memory of childhood?
Death of my father.
Tell me about it and don't lie right now.
I can't have it. You know, I can't do it, Henry. You know, can't do it.
Can't do it. Can't do it.
You can't do it, and I have to do it, and I don't want to have to do that, Sonny.
You just can't do it.
The deal. Can't do it.
I can't do it. That's what you said, huh? Can't do it.
This hour on The Score brought to you by Arlington Nissan. When searching for a new Nissan, search for arlingtonnissan.com. The game is Can't Do It. We trust the callers. 312-644-6767.
Wow. That's a change. Let's encourage. You know, I got an idea, and we didn't, I didn't run this by you, point guard. Let me try to set a tone and ask you a question.
Okay.
If you don't mind.
Sure.
I hope this will be a good question. I hope maybe it'll spark more provocative questions than what's your favorite color.
Sure.
Colonel Jessup.
And then maybe I'll ask you one.
Yeah. And if you want to say can't do it, feel free and I get a prize.
Okay.
But I think you'll answer because I'm going to ask you about you, your favorite topic.
Ha ha
ha. During your recent contract negotiations, Mr. Sparkins, and footnote, if I may, I tried to stay away as much as possible and let you work through it. I sense that's how you preferred it. So I let you know I was available for conversation. We had coffee one day. Now that it's over and you are in the fold for 2 years, share with our Score listeners what the most challenging, most difficult part of that very important, third, fourth, next contract in your career was.
It's a good question. There's a lot of them. It's
you gonna do it or I get a Les's press credential from
I'll answer. It's knowing that deadlines make deals, but then still feeling like it shouldn't take a deadline to make a deal. And you know, there's that old adage that if both sides are a little unhappy with how it resulted, then it was probably a good fair deal. And we got to a good place, and I'm definitely happy and thrilled to be on board, but it probably took longer than I thought it needed to, and it's stressful. And you know, I certainly have a decent opinion of myself and my abilities and our abilities as a show. I know, breaking news.
Eyeballs are peeled wide on the other side.
Whoa. So
I'm shocked to hear that, man.
But listen,
in the journal today.
If you don't have the opinion in yourself, how is anyone else going to have that opinion of you? And so I don't try to be cocky and arrogant, although sometimes I know that I am, but I don't try to be. But when it comes time for contract time, that's where I am willing to be a little high maintenance. Like I'm not high maintenance really ever, I don't think. I try not to be.
I agree with that.
But when it comes time to, you know, show me the money, as they say, I am going to be stubborn for what I think that I am worth and the work and the work ethic that I put in and the time that I put in. And I know I'm still young in the industry and in life. And so those things are oftentimes in conflict with each other. And you finally get that bridge gapped at the deadline. And that's the part that's tough, is waiting for the end, when you know, like they've said, we want you here. And I'm like, cool, I want to be here. But then it's figuring out what that's going to look like. That's the challenging part to me.
Yeah.
It's a respect thing. Also.
The rules are no follow up. I have more questions I want to ask, but I'm gonna leave it alone. And Jim Pastor, you blew it.
Feel free. Okay, there it is.
That's not a question. That's not a follow up. That's just a commentary.
All right. Well, what about you want me to take some calls?
Yeah. Let's get to the audi.
All right. Fine. We'll take some calls. All right. Fine. Joe in Lincoln Park. You're on Can't Do It. Who's your question for?
Mac.
Hello, Joe.
Hello. A couple of weeks ago, you mentioned a story about two former Bears, and you mentioned that Todd Berger was a huge hit at Raymond Harris's Christmas party. I was hoping you could elaborate on that.
Yeah. Oh, man. This is the essence of the segment, Joe. It was Raymond Harris's bachelor party. We had the conversation when Tony Medlin was on here when we were moving coats and gloves and hats for the homeless. Yeah, the day I met Todd Berger, we played golf in a charity tournament up in Kemper Lakes, and I thought I was playing when I saw the cart with I paid to play with a celebrity because I really, really loved the charity, Neuroblastoma, fantastic, rare form of cancer that kills kids. And I see in the cart McNeil Berger. I was not aware of a Bears offensive lineman out of Penn State named Todd Berger. He didn't play. I thought it was the punter Mitch Berger. You know how I feel about kickers. I was delighted when I find out it's Todd Berger. We became fast friends, and there are a lot of things he and I did together. We hung out together. We puffed. We listened to Frank Sinatra in his Jeep because the CD was stuck for 10 years, and he couldn't get it out of there. At Raymond Harris's bachelor party, Todd proved there is nothing he won't do to pleasure a woman. He has a taste for it all.
Okay. That sounds good. In Lake Geneva, John.
Does it?
Well.
You getting hungry?
No, but I mean.
Oh, boy.
It was an answered question.
Yeah. You know, Mitch Erosian, a program director who sits when we do this in his office with his finger on the dump button, is in the air right now. Did they have a fancy device you can take at 35,000 feet so you can hit a button? I bet not.
Did I also say get that bridge gapped? Whatever.
Oh, that's a good one.
I'm an idiot.
That's a good one.
John in Lake Geneva. Oh. Who's your question for?
Patiently waiting my turn.
Oh,
all right, go ahead,
is
John.
For you, Danny.
Yeah.
So obviously there was much controversy when you two replaced the previous team, and my question is, what is your book number versus the previous team's last book number?
I honestly don't know their number, which is a bad job by me. I probably should. I know that we are up, and I know that the win that we just posted in the fall book without any Cubs assistance is something that hadn't been done for years in afternoons at the Score. I don't know how many years. I think just a few, but it had been a couple of years, so we are up. Year over year in this time slot, but I honestly don't know the number that they were, but we in our target demographic for the fall book, I believe tied third. Is that accurate?
Or three or four?
Three or four. So I think that actually makes us four because it's 1-2 and then tie for three. Yeah, so four.
Yeah, ratings across the board here have been exceptional. You know, there was a lot of consternation among writers and message board posters, Twitter people, Facebook people when changes were made. I'm eager to see a follow-up 9 months later. What does Jimmy DeCastro's new score look like on the scorecard? Way better than anybody's written.
Let's go to... Let's go to Aurora and welcome Tosh to Can't Do It. Tosh, you're on the Score.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. Love the show.
Hello,
my
Tosh.
Question for you, Mr. McNeil.
Hit me.
I was wondering, a few months ago, you told a story about doing some cocaine late into the night, and you said someone who worked at the Score, you saw them do cocaine for the first time that night, and I just want to ask you, who was it?
Oh, boy. So, you know, you say do cocaine late into the night. Do you know another way to do it?
No,
just,
I don't.
Just dabble before
okay,
lunch.
Okay, yeah, I don't know. That's the pendulum to addiction. A survey you fill out, you know, you see how far bad you're getting, and it goes, does cocaine until sunlight, question mark. I look at the guy, is there another way? I went to Yale with one coworker who was here. I won't give you his name, but I will tell you we were on location with the Bears in southwestern Wisconsin, and he was petrified by the reaction of his closest work association here if he knew. That's all I'll say.
Feels like I can't do it, right? If you're not, yeah, not.
Can't do it.
That's a can't
There's
do
no
it.
No way you can do
yeah,
it.
Can't do it.
Can't
which is fine.
It.
Let's give him a book.
Yeah, we'll give him a prize.
Pick up a book and read it, Terry Bors.
Otto in Brookfield, you're on. Can't do it. Who's your question for?
Dan McNeil.
Otto, my favorite palindrome. How are you, sir?
I am fantastic, Dan. I got to ask you the question. You referred to the little incident after speaking with. Or after listening to yesterday's exchange with the Toucher, love that one anyway. Could you please read back to us in verbatim the text conversation that you had with him that you had referenced earlier in the show?
Sure. Let me put the goggles on and get the old Samsung here. He texted me after the show. For those of you who didn't hear it, contentious, you know, get in your face talk show host out of Boston. They were playing clips from our show Monday. Here we go.
Well, check the ratings, stupid.
Yeah. Hi, it's Fred Toucher. I'll come on your show. Parkins is probably in, but not so sure myself. There was a good 10 or 15 years when I did it similarly to how I heard you sound. I'm just not that pissed off anymore. Okay, he says. No further reply. And I reply, I didn't say no. And he says, I'm not going to throw a fit that you didn't have me on. I just want to come on because I think it'll be entertaining. Also, some weird publicist who I don't know texted me your number, which is creepy as hell. I thought I knew the guy, but I don't. He also texted my wife. So sorry about that. And I say, that's weird. I don't care. I don't suspect you'll be calling me in the middle of the night before you're getting ready to go to work. And I'm voice texting on a bad commute home, I note, and there's a few minutes. He says, have a good night. And I say, congrats on a job well done making your show about you guys. Most of the swinging Richards in our business have no idea how to do that, especially in mornings. You guys have to be as interesting, more interesting than 99% of the sports stories you talk about. That's where the conversation ended. My thought would be we have him on middle of next week when he's bored as hell because he's at another Super Bowl covering a team he doesn't give a crap about.
I don't go to the Super Bowl, stupid.
I think it's perfect. We'll have him on in the middle of next week. It'll be fun. Joel in Griffith is on Can't Do It. Joel, who's your question for?
It's for Mr. McNeil.
Hello, Joel.
Hey, last week you talked about summer when you were 19. And you were smoking hash with a buddy.
Yeah.
And it brought out some feelings that you didn't know were there.
Yes, sir.
In this little scenario, were you envisioning yourself being more of a pitcher or a catcher?
Neither, actually. Well, you know, I don't know how graphic I'm allowed to be here. I'll try to sanitize this. Boy, how do you say this without getting in a lot of trouble? We're just disgusting people. Some. Man. I never for a second thought about taking my pants off.
Okay. I think that's just going to lead to more questions, but whatever. I don't.
You know, I just.
Giving
know,
mood.
Eliminates a lot of things,
the
right?
The pinky finger of a woman is as far as I'm willing to go.
Segment is spoken in code.
I'm sorry.
This okay. is going great.
Let me ask you a question.
Now I'm confused.
You asked me a question. Can I ask you a question?
Certainly.
Okay. I think that you've mentioned therapy on the show, and I think that therapy is something that I've certainly thought about, and I think it's very helpful to be open and honest and all of that. You said you've been going for 19 years.
Yeah.
Off and on.
Yeah.
Off and on.
Short period in college, too, dealing with a mother's death. But yes, with a professional in the mental health field for about 19 years.
I am curious what types of, or what's the biggest recurring theme? I'm assuming you don't solve all problems when issues, not that they are problems when you go to therapy, but like, what are you still talking about in year 19 that you're maybe talking about in year 1 and 2?
Yeah, all psychologists know they'd be stupid to fix you. Then you don't walk in the door anymore.
There
right?
you go.
No,
yeah.
There are two that come to mind. The first of which is something that doesn't make me feel very good about myself at all. It's probably a defense mechanism I learned as a kid. I've gotten better. I finally became mindful of it maybe 10 years ago. I have had a tendency to need to have somebody with a bullseye on their chest. I don't know why. I think I know why. We've worked at this. It's probably because childhood was very chaotic. And that's how I learned how to navigate through things.
Wait, what do you mean when you say someone have a bull?
I have to have a target. I have to have something or somebody to be mad about. If things are great at home, there's something at work that's pissing me off. If things here are great, I'm mad at my wife. I finally recognized it a while ago. Recognizing it is a part of the first step of the process, and then you verbalize it, and then you act on it and stop. The worst of which, boy, this is not easy, but nice job.
Yeah.
It's I had a mother who was not accessible because of her diseases, psychological as well as physiological, and I learned, and my sister was not a big sister. I was her big brother since I turned 10. She's 3 years older. I got the feeling before I ever took a woman out on a date that I had nothing to offer the female gender. I was decidedly more comfortable in the company of my guy friends. And, you know, I've always had this, not so much last little while, but, you know, things are going good. The piano's going to fall out of the sky and hit me on the head. When it comes to women, what could I possibly offer a woman? My mother deserted me. My sister deserted me. Women are out to get me. And I think that discovery was 40, 41 when I made that. And
1941?
Yeah, bad year. Yeah, so I worked on that. It's not easy to talk about that.
Well, I'm glad you shared. Do you want to take any more calls or want to just talk Hall of Fame?
I think we got to talk. Teddy Greenstein is coming up.
All right.
He's handsome.
We will talk.
Let's smoke some hash and get with Teddy.
He wrote that he just can't do it with regards to Bonds and Clemens. We find out why next on The Score.
The Mariners looking for the tie. They would love a base hit into the gap, and they could win it with junior speed this stretch. And the 0-1 pitch on the way to Edgar Martinez. Swung on the line down the left field line for a base hit. Here comes Joy. Here is Junior to third base. They're going to wave him in. The throw to the plate will be late. The Mariners are going to play for the American League Championship. I don't believe it. It just continues. My, oh, my.
Ended up being a hell of a Hall of Fame class. You had Lee Smith and Harold Baines from the Veterans Committee. Mike Mussina makes it in. Edgar Martinez makes it in. Of course, Mariano Rivera, the headliner, as the first unanimous ever.
Yeah, Lee Smith had a long stay here in town, Danny, and he was one of a couple of Cubs pitchers who always had such a pained expression on his face long before he got tattooed. You just see him walking out to the bump, and he'd look like he just worked out for 3 hours sweating when it's cold in April. Yeah, he's a guy. He's a guy.
Not to mention Roy Halladay, of course, yeah. Also rounding out the class. Teddy Greenstein from the Tribune, friend of the show, has a Hall of Fame vote, and he joins us now. What's up, Teddy?
So we're not going to talk Clemson football. Is that what you're telling me?
I mean, listen.
We can if you want.
If you want.
It's open season, Teddy G. It's
nice Notre Dame
season.
Pick. Yeah.
I made a tremendous pick on Notre Dame. I'm glad Danny went opposite and fattened his wallet a little bit. But, yeah, man, happy to talk Baseball Hall of Fame with you.
So before we get into any of the specifics, you know, it's really cool that you have a vote, and it's probably not something that everybody knows about you. How much work do you put into filling out your ballot?
Yeah, going back a little bit, by the way, I know I've been at the Tribune so long, I've had all these kind of different lives. I was a baseball beat writer for 6 years.
So I've had a Hall of Fame vote for a while, and then it was taken away. Do you guys remember that whole thing with, like, Dan Le Batard and Deadspin?
Yes, of course.
I think he put his vote up for auction or something like that. So then there was all the scrutiny, so they came back and said you have to cover 50 games a year. So a couple months ago, I was talking to Paul Sullivan. I said, I think I was at 50 games last year. Let me see if I can get my vote back. And it worked out. To answer your question, Danny, you know, I put a decent amount of time into it. But I'd say I go more on emotion, on numbers. You know, I wrote a little something about it, and in what I wrote for the Tribune, I said the first question, the most important question I ask when I'm evaluating these guys is, was the player great? You know, so I'm not looking for longevity. I'm not looking for Harold Baines, a very good player for a long period of time. Was he great? So that's the first thing I ask myself. And then I also honestly, I look at just kind of contributions to the game, and was the guy a good teammate, and did he do a lot in the postseason, and did he contribute to baseball, and kind of did he bring a joy to the game? So that's how I look at it, and I ended up with 6 check marks this year.
Where's your level of shock that 100% of a fraternity that has a long and storied history of being, shall we say, sanctimonious? I think that's the best word. 100%. For Rivera, is it surprising or no?
Danny Mac, it's definitely great to see because, you know, some people look at it and some of the great players who should have been 100% were denied just because voters way back when, you know, there were some total clowns way back when somebody decided, oh, no, you know, Babe Ruth shouldn't get every vote, or Ted Williams shouldn't. So because of that, I think there were these stodgy folks who said, well, if they didn't get 100%, you know, I'm not going to vote for whoever, you know, your favorite might be, Tom Seaver or Tony Gwynn or some of these absolute greats. So I think some of the cranks probably were weeded out over the years. And, you know, don't look at it and say, well, should he be the first? Just look at your ballot and say, should I turn in my ballot without, you know, the check mark next to Mariano Rivera? And nobody can possibly say that. So even that dude in the Boston area who turned in his ballot with nobody, his didn't count, which is great because I think Mariano Rivera is a wonderful, you know, representative of the game and one of the greatest pitchers ever. And nobody has a bad word to say about him. So I'm glad he's the first.
Teddy Greenstein from the Tribune and Hall of Fame voter is our guest. You write in your piece in the Trib explaining the Hall of Fame vote. That's one of many tricky questions voters face. Of course, there's also the steroid one. I respect those who vote for transcendent stars such as Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, and Manny Ramirez. I just can't do it. Thank you for the shout-out for the Wednesdays at 4. But I'm curious, if you respect those who vote for them, why can't you do it?
Can't do it. You know, I want to feel good about the people I vote for. And something would just make me feel kind of dirty and queasy about voting for blatant cheaters. You know, look, Barry Bonds would have been a Hall of Famer had he not cheated. Roger Clemens, 95% would have been, although he had a hell of a second career, you know, once he got pumped up and left Boston. So that's not totally certain. And it is very hard. I voted for Mike Piazza. I voted for Jeff Bagwell. Those guys were probably not totally pure, but we just don't really know.
Did you vote for Pudge?
I don't think I had a vote then.
Oh, okay.
So I did not have a decision to make. I had about a five-year gap where I didn't have to decide on certain guys. So I really do respect the concept of you have to, you know, analyze the players in that era, whether it's the dead ball era or, you know, ballparks were smaller and expansion, so pitching was weak and you know, steroids were flowing. So I really do. I just don't choose to.
Would you ever vote for Bonds, Clemens, or Manny?
You know, I am pliable. I am open to change. Like, I didn't used to vote for Edgar Martinez, and in part because Harold Baines got in, I said Edgar has to get in. When you compare his OPS to Baines, it's not even close. So I don't love DHs. I prefer all-around players. I love defense, which is part of why I voted for Omar Vizquel. I have tremendous respect for that. And, like, Larry Walker is a good one for me because he was such a well-rounded player. Those are the ones who I, you know, lean on, who I flock to. I guess if some of those guys came out and said some stuff, maybe expressed some regret or humility, that would affect me. So, yeah, I'm open to it.
I want to back you up just a little bit. I wrote down something you said in your closing comments about Mariano Rivera. This applies to anybody who is eligible for Hall of Fame. Nobody ever said a bad word about him. They said bad words about Babe Ruth, but they whispered them. People don't remember. Well, I don't remember. I wasn't there for it. But I've read about it. He missed a chunk of the season because his body was so exhausted from his boozing, he had no choice. He was hospitalized. Ty Cobb was a raging racist. First guy I remember people saying was total jag was Steve Carlton, the left-hander from the Phillies. They get in because of their baseball resume. Why should what people say, whether the words are bad, good, or indifferent, matter?
Well, Danny Mac, I think the perfect example there is Curt Schilling, who I don't vote for. I don't look for guys to be saints, but I also don't want them to be complete jerks, and I find him to be an absolutely disgusting individual. And not only his Twitter feed and his political views, but I remember hearing the Bob Brenly story, the Damian Miller story from Game 4 of the 2001 World Series, where Schilling tells Damian Miller, hey, tell Skip to take me out, I'm done. And Schilling realizes that Bob Brenly is mic'd up, so he puts on this whole scene for television about how he doesn't want to come out of the game. And there's that quote from Ed Way, the former GM, where he says, he's our horse for 4 days, one out of 5 days, and on 4 out of 5 days, he's a horse's ass. It's one of those things where it's my ballot and I want to feel good about the guys I'm voting for. I don't need them to be saints, but I also want them to be decent people who made contributions to the game beyond their numbers.
And it seems to me like, because they do ask you, like one of the clauses in the instructions is about character. So you guys have that to fall back on. But it sounds like you're okay if there are some inconsistencies too.
Totally. And I mean, a lot of it, too, is, like, take Fred McGriff. Fred McGriff came to the Cubs when I was the Cubs beat writer in 01. The Cubs trade for him, and the deal is held up for several weeks because Fred McGriff is on a total losing team, the Padres, I believe, but he wants another year tacked onto his deal. So you would have thought a player, chance to join a contender would have been on the first plane, but he didn't. All right, he comes to the Cubs. And his personality, he was just a complete zero. And his defense was terrible. And his base running was awful. And I thought he was bad in the clubhouse. And, I understand he put up a lot of nice stats. But kind of like Curt Schilling, Fred McGriff is a guy I would be kind of offended if he made it into the Hall of Fame. Now, if I covered him with the Braves, I'm sure it would be different. But we get views of guys based on what we know. Like, when I was covering baseball, Billy Wagner, I thought, was just sensational.
Legs.
Oh,
my God. The legs on that man were powerful. That guy, 5'9", solid muscle. I loved him.
Glad you're talking about his, his legs and not what's hanging.
All right.
But you know what I'm saying? So Billy Wags, to me, he was awesome at his job. He was sensational. Part of it is that he was a smaller guy who's throwing 100 or 101 from the left side. So, we have certain experiences. Now, I never met Billy Wagner, but it seems like he was a good teammate and a good all-around guy. So when I look at it, I just look at a lot of other stuff than just the numbers.
I'm troubled by some of the things you're talking about.
Oh, I mean, I disagree with almost everything he's saying, but it's his ballot.
There is, I believe there's a humanitarian Hall of Fame. I think it's in Idaho. I'm not positive. Yeah, it's in Idaho. That's why they have the humanitarian bowl there, right? Wouldn't that be a natural hook? Watch a football game and go see people who are full of philanthropical endeavors in their life. It's the Baseball Hall of Fame. I don't need a good guy. I prefer it. I'd rather like the guys I root for. But I don't have to when I'm making a decision about where he ranks professionally. And if you think that's part of it, that being a bad team, guys who had bad teammates who said they would have it no other way but have him on their roster because of what they did on the diamond.
The wording Teddy, real quick, just the wording for context is what? Voting shall be based upon the player's record, playing ability, integrity, sportsmanship, character, and contribution to the team on which the player played.
Yeah, that's a lot of what I'm talking about, I think.
It is. Has that been amended, or is that Does that like go way back? Do you know?
I think it's been the same for a long time. Yeah. I mean, look, if you're just going through numbers, have a computer spit it out. I think this is kind of cool where we all have different criteria. And some voters are determined to put 10 on every year. I like the Hall of Fame to be really hard to get into. I'd rather it be, you know, if I'm right on the edge of a guy, I'll often say no. Like Omar Vizquel was right on the border for me, and I know his offensive numbers weren't great, but I ended up voting for him. So everybody has a different take on this, as I'm finding out, Danny and Danny.
Well, my thing my thing with the steroid users is, if you want to draw the line and say, okay, Sosa would not, like, right, Sosa's got over 600 home runs. That normally gets you in automatically, but he would have never hit that many if not for the steroids, so I'm a no on right. Sosa. Okay, fine. What I would say is, it wasn't against the rules at the time. It was, they looked the other way.
They needed to.
Buzz Selig is in, and I know you guys didn't vote for him. That was the Veterans Committee. But like, if you're saying, well, Veterans Committee puts Harold Baines in, therefore I've got to vote for Edgar Martinez. Well, Veterans Committee put Buzz Selig in. He oversaw the steroids era, and it's a museum to tell the story of the game, and it's tough to tell the story of that era without the Hall of Famers in, and especially guys like Bonds and Clemens, who are Hall of Fame talents without the steroids, who just got it extended. If Barry Bonds' home run record wasn't in the official record books of Major League Baseball because it was against the rules at the time and it was strict from the record, okay, fine. But if I Google baseball home run king, it's Barry Bonds. But that guy's not in the Hall of Fame? It just doesn't make any sense to me. It's contradictory.
That's why I'm not a hardliner. That's why I totally respect that viewpoint. Now, I think when Bonds, toward the end, when he was on HGH and his head was exploding, I think it was against the rules at that point. Maybe the same for Clemens late in his career. But, Danny, look, certain guys who took steroids, you know, there was a Cubs reliever who pretty much had no career, and then suddenly he added about 5 or 6 or 7 miles an hour on his fastball, and he became a guy who was saving 30, 40 games. Like, I understand that. He would not have had a career if not for steroids, and I'm sure a lot of guys looked at it like, the hitters are doing it. I'm trying to provide for my family. Why shouldn't I do it? I really do understand why some guys did it. I just personally don't want to check the box of Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, but I'm not going to make a strong case that other people can't. I'm only going to make a case. Don't vote for Fred McGriff. He's not a Hall of Famer.
I'm with you on that one. I mean, I also had a bad interview experience with him after I dropped $80 on a bottle of wine for him in New Orleans right after he signed. So I want that $80 back. But if his numbers were good enough, I would discard the crappy interview and vote for him. It's not the Hall of Fame for interviews, you know? If it were Fred Smirlis and a lot of guys who played in the leagues, we should do that, by the way. I'm all for that.
The Hall of Fame interview?
Yes, Hall of Fame interview, yeah.
What do you make of this, Teddy? Jeff Passan broke down these numbers. And we're talking to Teddy Greenstein. He's got a Hall of Fame vote. Of 232 public ballots, 71% voted for Clemens, 70% for Bonds. Of the 193 that remained private, 45% voted for both Clemens and Bonds. That is a stark difference between public and private ballots on the issue of steroids.
My sense is the younger guys are more open to voting for Bonds and Clemens. They probably look at it more like you do, more like these are transcendent players. They deserve to be in there. Look at the numbers. And they're also more likely to make their vote public because that's somewhat of a new thing. I mean, I think for the first, you know, for many, many decades, it was a private vote. Now it's much more, hey, here it is on Twitter, check it out, you know, here's my rationale. So I think it's probably a bit of an age thing. Or, I don't know, guys who were less likely to vote for them just don't want to take the flack from Giants fans or, you know, Blue Jays or Red Sox fans, whoever support Clemens. I guess those are the two factors.
Teddy, question I have for you. Was there any discussion when Tony La Russa gets kicked around? La Russa got in, right? A while back. He was a manager of two teams where needles were going in buttocks. Was that an issue? Was that something that was talked about? Both the, and that was before the A's, but it was happening at the end. You look at the video of the Bash Brothers in Oakland, and they're much thinner at the beginning than the end. But by the time McGuire got to that dump down in, he was, you know, we knew he was juicing when he picked up his kid after 62. What about La Russa?
Yeah, I mean, I've never voted for a manager. I'm actually not completely sure who votes for managers.
Okay. All right. Bad question.
No, I mean, it's look, all these things, you know, it's like this morality scale. And I don't know. There are probably very few people who are 100% clean. Like people say Dale Murphy is like the cleanest guy of all time. And, you know, you'd like to think a guy like Derek Jeter. But so many other guys, shoot, maybe they took a little something along the line, or, you know, Tony La Russa had to have some clue. I mean, the way he defended McGuire all those years, I mean, give me a break. So disingenuous. But Tony La Russa is happy now because his guy, Harold Baines, got in, and he thinks anyone who didn't support Harold doesn't know anything about baseball. So whatever, Tony.
Last one from me. Will you be voting for David Ortiz?
That's a great question. I need like 11 and a half months to think about that.
Good because, answer.
Yeah, that's a good punt. I mean, my first instinct is to say yes, because of all the beauty, you know, he brought to the game, his incredible work in the postseason.
Teddy, how can you vote for Ortiz if you don't vote for Bonds, though? Like,
I'm thinking about it.
I know, but I'm just saying, you got three more years on Bonds and Clemens. If you vote for Poppy, it's going to be a tough logical you know what I mean? It's going to be a tough one to connect because Poppy was implicated.
Poppy was a postseason legend, absolute legend who helped turn around a franchise that had been losing for 100 years. Barry Bonds in the postseason, I mean, obviously he was a monster with his giant head, you know, in that San Francisco World Series that Dusty managed and put up some good numbers. But
two headshots.
Postseason heroics. And also Barry Bonds, awful teammate, awful person. So it's not just about juice. I mean, we've talked about that with the juice. That's not a be-all, end-all for me. If it were, I probably wouldn't have voted for Piazza because I think everybody assumes he took some stuff.
Right. And that's why I asked the Pudge question, because
and quality of teammate and, you know, contributions to the game. If it was numbers, of course Barry would be in there. But I'm looking at a lot of other things.
All right.
We're over time, but what I think of invariably when I think of Mike Piazza is not having the stones to take Roger Clemens apart after that incident in the 0-0 World Series. That forever will be indelibly etched in my brain when I think of the great Mike Piazza. You gutless turd!
I was in the stadium that night. That's the top five weirdest things I've ever seen. Yeah. He was so stunned. I mean, Clemens throws that, you know, the bat,
a splintered bat. Yes, it's a splintered bat, and he doesn't react. You're the catcher. You're the captain. What are you doing? So it never happened in a hockey game, Teddy.
Would that be enough for you not to vote for Piazza?
No. Not a chance. Not a chance. It's not the tough guy Hall of Fame. It's the baseball Hall of Fame, right?
Thank you, Teddy.
Thanks, Teddy.
Enjoy, guys. Take care.
Good stuff.
Bottom of the hour brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Wolves own their best start since the last championship and boast the most all-stars of any AHL team. For the 25th anniversary, enjoy free parking courtesy of Kia. High-scoring winning hockey and free parking. Chicago Wolves, last team standings. There's a lot I disagree with there, and I think that's a really good insight into how, frankly, random and loose the parameters are for getting into storied Hall of Fame in sports.
Yeah, it's a Hall of Fame since Rose in the Gambling that has been really, really people have really tough feelings when they go to this stuff. It's a visceral reaction they have to this Hall of Fame, I think, for more than any other.
Yeah, that is I got some follow-up thoughts there we'll get to, plus a shot at $1,000 coming up. It's McNeil and Parkins on the Score. It's time for your chance to win $1,000 in cash on the Score. This hour's keyword is diploma. Text diploma, DIPLOMA, to 72881 by the end of the hour. Again, the keyword is diploma to 72881. One randomly selected nationwide entrant from this hour will win. Please do not text and drive. Message and data rates may apply.
Nice spelling, bud.
Thank you.
This hour's keyword is rubber. R-U-B-B-R. Text rubber. Oops, there goes another rubber tree plant. Wow, that's an old, that's a very old song.
Amazing!
So eager to get to the punchline, he forgot a vowel.
Rubber.
Oh my God.
R-U-B-B-R.
Yes!
That's, you know what? We're nearing the anniversary of the passing of Doug Buffon. It's an homage to Doug, who embarrassed the crap out of his parents at a sixth grade spelling bee when he shorted Apple, one of its P's.
A-P-L-E, it happens. God, that's good. R-U-B-B-R. Thank you, Mully, for the laugh. And listen, Teddy is our guy. We like Teddy. I thought that there were a number of logical breakdowns there, but it's funny because he defends it all by saying, I don't care if there are inconsistencies here. It's my ballot. And that is kind of checkmate. Like, the rules are not.
That's right. I agree.
You know what I mean? Like, the rules do not say that he has to apply the same scrutiny to David Ortiz as he does Barry Bonds. I would like him to.
That's how I would approach it if I have a vote. But I don't want to vote. I never desire to vote. I always thought I should have a Heisman Trophy vote because there are guys, not now, but for the longest time, if you've ever seen a college football game, you get a Heisman vote.
Oh, yeah, there's over 900 people who vote for that.
I think it's over 1,000 now.
It might be. I know Burnsy still has one, which I think is laughable. He doesn't watch college football during the regular season. He takes it very seriously at the end. But, I mean, I knew a guy who's the columnist for the Syracuse Post-Standard who had a Heisman vote, and he would vote for, like, the kid who overcame cancer. He was like, a kid on Boston College. I'm like,
yeah.
That's your Heisman Trophy vote? I mean,
yeah.
Great story, but that's not what the award is for.
No,
what are you doing?
It is. Rick Tellender did something really peculiar with his Heisman vote years ago. I'm struggling to remember what it was.
Shep says 870 Heisman voters.
870 only? Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, they're pairing. They're knocking it down.
And it's contracting.
I love it.
I'm joking about Dan. He can have a Heisman vote. But yeah,
how do you get one?
You got to be some level of importance in a media market that covers college football. They try to do it geographically. I know that. They try to spread out the votes by region.
Think we can get me one?
You clearly watch enough of it. Yes, you should get two. You should get Bernstein's.
I should get. Does Archie Griffin get two? Heisman winners get one. So does he get two votes?
That's an awesome question. I would hope.
Shep, I actually think that that is possible. I bet you that if you keep doing your Notre Dame podcast and grow that brand and your brand in the Midwest, I would say that within 10 years you could have a Heisman vote. I would say that's attainable.
Radio.com going to be posted tomorrow. My thoughts on how Trevor Lawrence is going to be as decorated as Tim Tebow. Coming in hot for you.
That's my take. Oh, actually, I said more decorated than Tim Tebow.
Right.
I said most decorated ever. Okay. I can't wait to listen. But yeah, Teddy G. Guy's got a Hall of Fame vote.
I covered college football for the paper in Northwest Indiana. My first real job out of the internship was Swirsk. And because of that, I got to vote for Big Ten awards. And I considered it a privilege to have the vote. And I spent a lot of time before I cast ballots. I hope I got them right because that's important to those kids and those coaches and those universities.
Yeah, I kind of admire the somewhat casual nature that Teddy puts into his ballot. It's just like, yeah, I got a vote. I wanted it back. It's my ballot. I'll put it out there. I'll put out my reasoning. Like, he doesn't hide by making his ballot anonymous. So I respect that. And he's just like, no, I'm not voting for him. I don't feel like it. Okay.
Texter says I should get a vote in the Fishing Hall of Fame. I need to visit it first. I've every time I go to Hayward, where the freshwater fishing Hall of Fame is, I'm busy fishing. I don't want to go to a museum. I'm in the water, or on the water, not in it. Hopefully not in it. But I do have some fishing news I would be delighted to report a little bit later on, if time allows. And if you're a guy who prefers commuting by way of a manly truck, I want to enlighten you on a new product. Not my product, but the Blue Oval's been put on notice by a competitor, and I think they will respond at Ford. And with vigor.
We can get into all that coming up. McNeil and Parkins on the score.
He's in two different fishing halls of fame.
Wow.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.